We're talking now with two City of Sandpoint residents who are for and against the 1% local option tax that city residents will see as a proposal on the ballot and be voting on this next Tuesday, November 2nd. With us today are Clay Hutchison and Helen Newton, who are respectively pro and con on this issue. Clay, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Helen.
And Helen, thank you for taking time to talk.
You're welcome.
Well, I'd like to clarify that my role today is just as facilitator, so I'm not weighing in on either side. As I mentioned earlier, when I recruited you both for today's interview, that we're not shooting for a winner or a loser here, but rather a chance for people to hear the benefits and the drawbacks of this proposed local option tax. So don't think of this as a debate so much as a good discussion. And with that, I want to frame up what the ballot measure is a bit more. It proposes that 1% would be added to the sales tax for purchases that are made in the city. So instead of a sales tax of 6% that we currently have with the state, the sales tax for things purchased in the city gets bumped up to 7%. If approved, it would go into effect in 2022 and would sunset or expire in 7 years, which would be 2029, but my math. The money it raises would be dedicated to parks and sidewalks. The ballot measure specifies it would go to parks improvements that are on the drawing board for City Beach, the downtown Sandpoint, Sand Creek waterfront, the Traverse Centennial Great Northern Sports Complex out on Pine Street. Could be used to purchase property for open space, parks, and recreation. And it would support implementation of the city's pedestrian priority sidewalk network. So it sets aside money for building sidewalks. It says these funds are not limited to these five things, and it says there's no priority for the project. So that would be established by the city council as to what priority they might take these things on by. This particular local option tax is very much the same as the five-year 1% local option tax that Sandpoint voters approved in 1995. And that funded the construction of the grandstands and the field improvements to Memorial Field. That tax expired at the end of 2020. So since this is the city asking voters to approve a continuation of that kind of tax. And that's the proposal. City residents will get to vote in favor of it or against it. And one more note, to pass it requires 60% of the votes to be in favor. So it does require a supermajority to pass. So with that, let's hear from our guests. Clay Hutchison, just going alphabetically, you're up first. Can you take a few minutes and tell us why you're in favor of the proposed 1% local option tax?
Certainly. First, a couple of things. Helen, I want to thank you for your service. You've been, my understanding, on the city council. You've been the city clerk, and you're pretty passionate about coming in to the various meetings and speaking about issues that are important to you. And that is all very important in our form of government. So thank you for that. The next thing is in disclosure, I am one of the principals that is spearheading the Carousel of Smiles project. And though we are seeking a location in the city parks, specifically in the Sand Creek Farmers Landing thing, we are not seeking any lot funds and we are not seeking any tax funds from the city of Sandpoint. We're a 501c3. And we will get our project and our goals accomplished by donations and grants. So, but even without being part of the Carousel Project, I would be in favor of the lot tax, as I was with the previous one. And pretty much I approach this from a very practical standpoint. And I think the first question we need to ask ourselves as citizens and taxpayers is, do we want to see improvements to our sidewalks and to our parks department? Into our various parks? And if the answer is no, that's a different kind of discussion. But if the answer is yes, then we can turn to how do we actually pay for that? And, you know, the city has to rely on taxes for its revenue. That's the revenue source. And in local cities, they basically, it's property tax. I'm pretty sure that all, if not most, if not all of sales tax and income tax in the state of Idaho goes to the states. And then, yes, the city can apply for grants back to receive some of those funds back. But pretty much all these projects we're talking about get funded by property tax. And as Chris mentioned, the LOT tax is a provision in the Idaho state statutes that allows for communities of less than 10,000 population who are resort communities or other people that use amenities of the community who are not residents, they provide for this ability to do a local option tax, a local option non-property tax. And he described that pretty well. So, the big takeaways, we had some, this is a very specific program. It's limited. And as he said, the city council debated this fairly vigorously on a fairly tight time frame, given that they had to wait for the census to come out. But, they decided it was 1%, not more, 1% sales tax. They decided it was to be set for 7 years, and they decided the program and what it would go for. And so it's important to understand what this tax is and what it's not. It's not going to solve all the problems, all the desires and needs that we have in the city. It's a very specific program to go for the sidewalks, the 200,000 holdback for sidewalks, and the rest of those parks, the three parks that they mentioned, and the ability to buy some land to also increase the holdings for Parks Department. And it's a tool that is probably the only way we can get non-residents to share in the costs, the amenities that they use. That's why this tax exists in the Idaho statutes. We have a lot of people that use our amenities. We know that. That's been vigorously discussed. And this is one of the only ways to get non-residents to share in that. And it's estimated that 85% of the sales tax generated in our community is by non-residents. So that's a pretty big number. And another very important thing on this is its revenue reasonably certain. Obviously, it's an estimate, but it's a pretty close estimate. And so when the city knows that's in place, they can use that to apply for other grants to leverage this money. And oftentimes those grants, state, federal, and private foundation grants, require that funds be in place for the projects that you are applying for. And so they get the opportunity to leverage this money and to further increase the ability to get these amenities done in a timely fashion. And as a practical matter, this is a great tool for Sandpoint, and that's why I am in favor of it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Clay. And Helen, we had a little glitch there. So you missed some of what Clay had to say.
I did. But can you summarize?
Sure. I am in favor of this from a practical standpoint. It is a tool and a revenue source unlike any other, that it gives a very specific amount of money earmarked for very specific purposes. Not so specific that we know exactly what every dollar is going to go, but we know it goes to our sidewalks, we know it goes to our parks, and we know it is allowed to fund the purchase of some additional park land if that is in the interest. It was debated and put on the ballot by the city council. They looked at a lot of options, and they decided that this is what made sense for this program. And it is a very specific program. It's not going to solve all the problems that we, all the desires and all the problems and other needs that we have. You know, it's only going to go for what it can. So that's from a practical standpoint, that's why I am in favor of it.
Thank you.
Hey, Helen, your turn. Why are you opposed?
Okay. Thank you, Chris, for inviting me to participate. And Clay, thank you for agreeing to participate and make this a balanced presentation. My background is 24 years on city and the city clerk, 4 years on city council. And for me and our family, parks use going back 70 years when we had a very much unimproved city beach. Lakeview Park belonged to the county and was home to the county fair, and Memorial Field was used only by football and baseball. I am opposed to the local option tax on the upcoming ballot, but let me be clear, I am not opposed to the mechanism which allows citizens to decide what to tax, how much to tax, and how to spend the revenues. It puts the taxpayers in charge of their own destiny and allows government by the people to actually happen. I supported both of the non-property taxes that became effective January 1st, 2016. The 7-year, 7% tax on hotel motel occupancies was dedicated to support city infrastructure and public safety. The five-year 1% tax on every item sold within the city was clearly dedicated to support improvements to the hallowed ground of Memorial Field. And that, in my opinion, is the only reason that it passed. But then you yourself, Chris, together with three Memorial Field neighbors, testified before the City Council on November 20th, 2019, that the public had been misled with regard to what they expected to happen and what actually happened. The city misled us then. This time around, I would expect no difference. I read from the ballot, complete the following projects to completion as prioritized. Then following the list of projects are the words, in no priority order. This ambiguity tells me that regardless of what projects are on the list, the city will do whatever they want. The 2016 non-property tax stream of revenue ended January 1st of this year. The City Council had 5 years to anticipate its conclusion and to discuss how to structure the next one. I find no evidence that the council discussed this. The matter was thrust upon them on September 15th, and they were basically told, approve this now or we will lose a year. And so once again, we are offered parks improvements, City Beach, Waterfront, and Traverse Sports Complex, and the purchase of more open space. I maintain that our park system is already gold standard, but our streets and sidewalks are certainly not. They are the underlying infrastructure of our community. I believe we should concentrate on building a solid foundation before we put in the pool.
Well, thank you, Helen, for that, and Clay as well for yours. So let's do some follow-up questions here. Helen, I'd probably ask one of the questions that Clay raised, and that is that this particular kind of tax gets people from outside the city to help pay for infrastructure within the city, which there's not really a mechanism for that right now. And you mentioned you don't oppose that as a mechanism. But do you think it's appropriate that the city be using that money specifically for parks?
No, I don't think it's appropriate. I think we have too many things that we actually need rather than things we would like to have, like, more park space. We have 127 acres of park space in the city now. It's well-maintained. It's beautiful. It's used on occasion at capacity, but not very often. I drive past these parks and oftentimes there is nobody to be seen. I think we spent $4 million from the last 5 years and we got apparently a premium sports complex there at Memorial Field. But we need to be looking at the basics.
Okay. Clay, how would you respond to that in terms of should parks be a priority?
I think what the city council had to decide when they created this, because they have to be very specific, maybe not as much specificity as some people would like, but they had to be very specific on what this money would be used for. That's part of the statutes. And it was debated on quite vigorously in the city council meeting when they approved this about the roads and the fact that we do have streets that are failing. We need to have those repaired. And I think the if I remember the number correctly, we have something like $90 or $95 million worth of road kind of repair that needs to happen. I could be wrong on that, but it was the point is that it's a pretty substantial amount. And it was also discussed that there are mechanisms to get that done, state grants, maybe some federal grants that help with that. And so the idea that was discussed is that an LOT tax at 1%, and they could put more on there, but it would never pass. If you put 2, 3, 4, 5% on there, there's no way that's going to pass. So the LOT tax, wouldn't really do much for the roads. And so if you're going to ask to get this passed, you have to have it on things that will get passed that will actually give us some, to use a bad phrase, some bang for the buck there. And then in that debate, I think it was definitely Councilwoman Sherman said, okay, but let's get at least some sidewalks in there. And they debated that and they did put that in with a holdback. So that's part of the infrastructure that we all know we need, we all want. And they very cleverly, and they asked council, council was there, city council was there, can we do this? And they put in a $200,000 holdback on these funds, specifically for our sidewalk program, which boosts it from $50,000 a year to presumably $250,000 a year, which is a huge, huge increase on the sidewalks. So it is going to some of that vital infrastructure. But if you put this into the roads, you know, they felt, and I agree with them, that it just wouldn't accomplish what we needed to do, and we'd be using a tool in an inappropriate way that wasn't the best way to do it. And so what they put on for this year, for this ballot, is the program they have. And so the question is, do we just say no, or do we go with what's on there? As I said before, it's not going to solve all the problems that we have. This is money that doesn't exist right now. So it's not like if you don't approve it, that all of a sudden this money is going to be available for some other project. It's not, because it doesn't exist unless we approve it.
Okay, Helen, to Clay's point that the amount of fixed roads is so much that the lot won't significantly help, and that there are other funding mechanisms for roads out there. What would you say to that?
Well, I don't think the taxes from the local option tax are really enough to make a big difference on any project they've mentioned. The three that are primary, according to their park study, 159 pages, and I think it starts on page 109, they start estimating the costs for these projects. And I think the beach was about 20 to 30 million. The little park going into the beach where the motel used to sit, that was 13 million. I think that Travers was about 15, 20 million. I added up at least 50 million and change for these projects. And so the 12 million that the city's going to collect over 7 years is not going to make a dent in that. And the thing is, I know that the cry out there is, but it will use it for leverage for grants. We're a lot more likely to get a grant for infrastructure than we are for beautifying parks.
Okay. Clay, I don't know if you have a response for that, but
yeah, okay. Sure, it's part of the discussion. So, you know, the estimate is about $12 million over the 7 years. So that's the good news. The bad news, it's only $12 million. So, you know, this is not going to pay for all the parks departments, nor would it pay for all that kind of stuff, but it is a revenue source. And a big takeaway, it's a revenue source where 85% of it comes from, not from the backs of the Sandpoint taxpayers. And part of the reason why the parks were chosen, I believe, is because that's a very visible area where non-residents use our amenities a lot. You know, it's not just people from out of state. It's all of Bonner County and it's all of North Idaho. So it's a way to generate some revenue from, not from the taxpayers in Sandpoint. And it's just a part of the puzzle that gives the city a tool to do that. And some of this, you know, we don't, the beauty about some of these parks is you don't have to say, all right, we're going to do it all at once. That was a bit more of what the Memorial Field Park complex needed. You kind of had to do it all before you started it at all. But that's not the case in these other parks. There's a lot of subterranean infrastructure that needs to be improved. That's not sexy. You're not going to raise a lot of private donation funds for subterranean stormwater management improvements. But those are very important to have. And so, you know, it gets this process rolling. And it's a long-term process. It's not going to be solved in just a few years. But to deny the $12 million or whatever it ends up being because it's not enough is, like, to me, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
I don't want to deny the $12 million. I just want it to be spent in a better way, more efficiently. And I have a question. I keep hearing this. 85% is coming from people who don't live in Sandpoint. Where does that calculation come from? Who did it? How did they arrive at it?
So I'm making an assumption here, and I know that can be very dangerous, but there is going to be lots of records on sales tax accumulation. I mean, sales tax has to be reported to the state. And I think all the sales tax, the normal sales tax goes to the state. So we have in the databases, and I don't have that database because it's not my job, but in that database, we know to the dollar what the sales tax is that's collected. And somewhere they have probably a good database, if some of it may be guesstimate, on how many of those people are residents in Sandpoint, how many of those people are not residents in Sandpoint, Sandpoint taxpayers. And that's where the city did their analysis and came up with the 85%. In other words, 85% of the money spent in Sandpoint is from non-Sandpoint residents. And that's the figure they've come up with. And I have no reason to think that that's, you know, that that's an incorrect figure. It may be a plus or minus figure, but that's what's been put forth.
Well, I would take the position that I have no reason to believe that figure. None at all that can convince me that that's, and I hear people say, well, the tourists don't pay. You know, on top of the 6% tax from the state, the city of Sandpoint adds 7% on every room that's rented. And all of that was supposed to go to infrastructure. I have not been able to find any evidence of how that money was spent. I called the city treasurer and I said, first of all, I called her to find out how much this parks plan cost us. It was $190,000. That's $200,000 worth of sidewalks, you know. Okay, so it cost us $190,000. It was done by three firms from Denver. And the cities they compared this with were three from Colorado and one from New Hampshire. I don't think it's acceptable to simply accept carte blanche what people who really have no concept of what our community is about to come in and say, you need to spend $29 million on the City Beach and Windbag Marina. $29 million.
You have that study before you, I assume. Does that include the property acquisition, which they're doing a trade on?
No. That's just that one project.
Yeah. Okay, no, well, I'll tell you what. Pages. I'd like to do a follow-up.
I'd love to address those comments just a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, go ahead.
If I can. Okay. So the parks plan was a process, and it was a multi-year process. They actually announced it back at the end of 2016. And yes, they hired some firms, but one of the guys used to live in Sandpoint and was Spokane and is Spokane resident, the landscape architecture firm. So in that process, this isn't like they just created a plan and dropped it on the desk. There were a huge amount of opportunities for the community to weigh in and give their input. And I was involved in a lot of those meetings, probably a great majority of them. And I saw the plan evolve as it accepted the community input and the community ideas. So it's not fair to say that this was just dropped from outside people. It wasn't. You want sometimes outside people who can compare and let us know what is being done around the country, what has worked, what doesn't work. We don't want to just be, you know, that's the forest through the trees kind of thing. But there was a tremendous amount of community input. And that community input has been reflected in those plans. And of the people that responded, because if you don't respond, then no, your input's not put into it. But of the people that responded, the majority of those people wanted these kinds of improvements. And that's why it ended up in the plan. So it's not quite fair to say, you know, that there was no community involvement, because there was huge involvement. And it's kind of a roadmap. You have to know where you can go before you can figure out how to get there. And it doesn't mean that every one of those projects is going to get done. It doesn't mean that. But it's a way to start the process to improve our parks plans, you know, which is an amenity that everybody uses in this town. Well, they have the opportunity to use it. Doesn't mean that they do use it.
Well, here's the thing, and you'll have to forgive me for my skepticism, but I did work from the other side of this platform here inside the city for 24 years, I attended every meeting the city council had, every workshop they had, every public gathering they had. And what I saw in many cases was you'd hold a workshop here to look at this, and then you'd go hold it at another location. It was the same people who came to the workshops. It was the same people from the public that came. And so that skewed the outcome of the surveys. I participate on every survey that the city puts online. And it's interesting to see when I read the comments, sometimes up to 200 comments. It's interesting to see what conclusion the city draws from those comments. I would not draw the same conclusions.
Yeah, it's a good point. And the big point is you have to participate in order to have your voice heard. And if people don't participate in the surveys and come to these meetings, you know, they can't later on say, oh, gee, my voice wasn't heard, because you've got to put it out there. And yes.
Oh, I know that.
Yes.
I absolutely agree with that.
And yes, there are very, you're accurate in saying that if a group that has a special interest rallies their people, you're going to get a lot of those opinions. But you can see that, and they did see that in this survey they did for the LOD tax. They could see that based on the results that you had a special interest group, you know, whether it be pickleball or the carousel or the volleyball guys or the frisbee guys, whatever special the dog people, you know, who really advocated for a dog park. You can see the special interest groups, people who have a passion for something, rally their people, and you can see those results. And that does get taken into account, that sometimes the input is skewed. And I do believe that the consultants and the city is able to see that and mitigate that to some extent. But you know, if you've got a passion, you've got to advocate for it.
Always have.
And conversely, yeah. You have to advocate for things like you're doing here that you don't believe in. And that's part of the process. And then the council has to sit there and weigh all that out. We have a very diverse community. And this day and age, we tend to be very singular in our passions. And they've got to weigh all that out and make some tough decisions sometimes.
When you say we have a very diverse community, and let's think only of in the city limits, where do you see that diversity?
I think you've got diversity on virtually all aspects. You've got economic diversity. You have a diversity in interests and passions, how we recreate, how we go about our lives. You've got political diversity. You know, I mean, this is a very, very diverse community. I believe it is.
Helen, do you not agree?
Well, no, having lived here all my life, the first time I ever saw a Black person was when I went to college in 1959. We don't have racial diversity. Hopefully we will. We certainly have diversity economically, but it's from the extreme at either end. We don't have a lot of in the middle. People are either doing very well or they are struggling to survive. Diversity as to interests, and I'm not meaning to pick on any particular interest here, because this is a sport I've never seen or never played. I'll just throw out pickleball. You know, suddenly on these surveys, every other comment is, oh, we've got to have pickleball, we've got to have pickleball. And when I talk to people who I have known for a long time, they'll say, what in the heck is pickleball and why do we need special courts for it? They don't see a need for pickleball courts, but it's on the city's list.
I would say that point, I initially agree with you. I had never heard of pickleball before we had the dinner. and that was a very vociferous group that gathered together, and they were out in front, pickleball, pickleball. But then when you peel that layer back and say, what is pickleball? And you start looking at it, you find out that it is the fastest growing sport in the United States.
And it's I know that.
And now we know it, but you and I had never heard of pickleball.
No.
And it's a sport that demographically tends to be attracted to our older demographic tends to be attracted to it. So, yeah, they were in there. And And I think that at Memorial Field, they restriped some courts that are over there, and there are some pickleball courts there. But for the most part, that group, you know, if they're going to expect city funds, taxpayer funds, whether it be lot tax or any other tax, to be used on their on their particular passion, there's going to be some pretty vigorous debate on that. And I suspect that an awful lot of the comments will be, well, if you guys are so passionate about pickleball, why don't you guys get together and raise your funds and do a joint public private public partnership? And you contribute the funds, and maybe the city will carve out a piece of land. That's another way some of these projects in that $30 million that is estimated the parks plan, some of this will come about that way. It's not all going to come about through tax money. It's what the carousel is doing. It's probably what the dog park it will end up doing, and things like pickleball courts. If you have a very special interest group, you know, they've got to step up and bring some funds to the table here.
And the skate park kids are really younger people, I should say, not necessarily kids, are pretty energized too. And there's a whole different demographic. But you know what? You guys have done wonderfully. We're almost out of time. You didn't need a facilitator. So we have time for about a minute and a half from each of you to wrap up what you want to say.
Mine's two and a half minutes, Chris.
That's what?
Mine is 2.5 minutes.
Talk fast.
Okay. Well, Helen, you go first. Give us a little closing statement about why you're opposed.
I'll talk fast. Here is the thing. The outcome of this vote will depend on voter turnout. Historically, city elections have very low turnout when the mayoral position is not on the ballot, and that's the case this year. The city council members need to stop and think. They need to determine the structuring of this tax. They need to look at ways that will benefit not just the tourists, but the people who live here and pay the property tax. The ballot has to pass by 60%. The proponents are spending a great deal of money to sell this. They and their supporters will turn out and vote. If the taxpayers who are opposed to this new tax dollars that will be spent largely on amenities, if they don't turn out, they will have only themselves to blame. It's been years since our city streets have had any attention. Cody Van Dyke, former city engineer, made a case for that in a letter to the editor. Former councilwoman and mayor Carrie Logan made a case for using the money on the improvement or enlargement, of the wastewater treatment plant. That has to be done. Let's do what we need, not just what we want. But it's imperative that you vote.
Okay, Helen Newton, thank you. And Clay, you got about 2 minutes.
I would certainly agree with Helen. It's important to vote. If you don't vote, you know, your opinion doesn't get at the ballot. She's 100% correct on that. So, you know, no one likes taxes, but this, you know, if we're going to have a tax, this is a pretty palatable tax. It's 1 cent per dollar. If you spend $10,000, it's a $100 contribution. It's the power of numbers. We're spreading out over a vast group of people, and we're generating a pretty sizable and useful sum of money that can go for the very specific uses that were put on the ballot. It's not going to solve everything, but it's a good chunk of money. It's a good tool, and it's a good resource. It helps spread out the cost of the amenities that way more people than just the people who live in Sandpoint use. They get to share in that amenities. And it also gives the city the ability to leverage that with some other grants that are very specific, state, federal, and foundation grants that need matching funds in place in order to apply for those grants. It's a small piece to the big puzzle, but it's an important piece, and it's essentially kind of found money. I'm not trying to say that taxes and spending taxes, you know, they need to be taken seriously, because this is money from hard-earned people, but it's a pretty palatable tax, and I think it gives us a lot of bang for the buck, and it's what's on the ballot right now. What's not on the ballot is using this tax to solve a whole lot of other issues. We have those. They're not going away, but this is a very specific one. I think it's a good use of this procedure that is only available to resort communities under 10,000. And I think we should vote for it.
Okay.
Chris, Clay, this was really fun. Can we do it again on other subjects?
Yeah, we probably
make that
can
a weekly this program, again. Man.
I really appreciate you both taking time to bring your pro and con on this. Again, the vote is coming up this coming Tuesday, November 2nd, and I think you helped inform some people about both sides of the issue. So thank you, Clay Hutchison and Helen Newton.